A tragedy in Dallas. Thursday night, at least 5 officers killed and 7 wounded in a sniper attack that turned a peaceful protest into a hectic and horrific crime scene. From America's Election Headquarters, I'm Dana Perino alongside Chris Steyerwalt. We have a lot to get to that includes politics. And unfortunately, Chris, after a situation like we saw last night and in an election year, of course, people turn to politics right away, which I find hard to stomach, but here we are. This is what we do, and this is what we talk about. So,
wait. It's not like we're engaged in politics. Are downstream of culture. Culture is more important than politics. People are more important than culture. There is an order of things, but this is our public space, right? This is where Americans deal with these issues, and I would also say this is where we look to leaders to lead.
I agree with that, and that's what I think we should maybe you and I can spend our time talking about that, because obviously it was horrific. There's still details that are coming forward, and there's lots of recriminations on both sides, lots of blame, but also calls for reasonableness, mm-hmm. and for, as David French of National Review put it, a pump the brakes a little bit.
But don't you get the feeling, and I think that this isn't really political except for this, the general sense, and I know this is a country that had a civil war. I know this is a country that has seen massive disruption and dislocation. We've seen so much in America, and even as recently as with 50 years ago, riots in every major American city, that we saw the LA riots. We've seen a lot, but there is the feeling, and perhaps I'm just being paranoid, but I do have the feeling that things are coming apart, that there is an unravelingness that's going on here, and that it doesn't seem like the system is sufficient to that. Many decades of the loss of trust in institutions, many decades in loss of trust in leadership leads us to a point where it doesn't feel like things are holding together very well.
I get that, too. But I try to think about, in this case, my go-to is to my faith and to prayer.
Sure.
Right? And that's where I learned right and wrong, and that's how I was raised. And I don't try to pass judgment about anyone else's faith. But I do wonder, so what is the root answer? Not the root cause, but what's the root answer?
Well,
and I'm not sure we will ever know that necessarily. I'm a little tongue-tied, a little speechless.
It is hard for us because we want... I know that the truth is, in America, we have, as I said, faced more difficult times than this, but I don't know that we have faced them with as little to believe in. And I mean that both in the temporal and the spiritual sense. We don't. I watched, as an example, James Comey, the director of the FBI, a man who is held in great esteem in Washington, a career law enforcement guy with a really impressive track record. But even if you think that he's a jerk, or even if you think that what he did in the Bush administration, not you, but even if one were to think that he had been unfair to Alberto Gonzalez or mm-hmm. whatever, he's still the director of the FBI. And the discussion when he opted to not suggest criminal charges against Hillary Clinton, the immediate allegations that the FBI was essentially a criminal enterprise, or that the Justice Department, America's top law enforcement officer, Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General of the United States, had taken a bribe. And we go so fast now. And you know what? I don't think it's true. But what if it was true? Even if it was true, that is an accusation of such enormity. It reflects sort of where we are and where people feel about the ability of institutions to function. So if we have seen the rise of a lack of faith in God or belief in something beyond ourselves, we've seen that decline. And this is also coupled with a decline in trust and confidence in institutions. Then when the going gets tough, that's what I mean about that feeling of unraveling, that sense of what is going on here that we can't seem to remediate ourselves.
And so what do you think the answer to that is then? Because That's very thoughtful.
that is not the discussion happening
at the presidential level. And is it a is it something that the federal government can solve? I personally don't think so.
Well, of course not.
The government's too big.
No.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not that it's too big. Oh, you mean it's too big, period?
Yes.
Okay, because I was going to say, to be big enough to deal with these issues, the federal government would have to be so large
as it would encompass
everything in your imagining. The problem is, you know, we talked a long time ago about the woman, and she stayed in my mind, the woman at Safeway who stopped me to say, you have to tell these people that if they vote for Donald Trump, it will be a disaster. And then I told her the story about Windsor Heights, West Virginia, and about opioid addiction and out of wedlock births and unemployment and empty schools that are closed, empty churches, that institutions that don't function anymore. And I said, if I tell them that, they're going to tell me there. It already is a disaster. You're too late.
Right.
And so the thing about politics is we have a belief in America. We want to believe that. The Avett Brothers have a song where they talk about how we see things, and that your life doesn't change by the man who's elected. And that line stays with me because the reality for America is, yes, every election's important. Yes, every outcome is important. All of these things are true. But the ties that bind, the things that make people work happen in their home, in their neighborhood, in their life, all around them. But in the nationalization of everything, in the merging of everything, in the Twitterification of everything, we are increasingly prone. We look to Washington. We look to the Great Father in D.C. and say, okay, we'll fix this and do it. And it's simply not within the reach or possibility of any federal agency.
That's a very conservative libertarian point of view, but the liberals don't see it that way, right? They want more control from a government standpoint, which doesn't work.
Can I get weird for a second? Let me just get weird.
Brace yourself, Sheila.
There are, by my lights, two ways of looking at everybody since Plato and some before have agreed that the reason we need a government is because people do the wrong things. There has been a disagreement since the time of Plato, or since shortly thereafter, about why. And Aristotle and others would tell you that the problem is that you don't know enough, and that if you knew more and if you understood things better, that you wouldn't do the wrong things. And then Augustine of Hippo and Saul of Tarsus and others, and then Martin Luther and a whole bunch of other people would say, no. Your problem is you have a rotten will. It's because you're a human being, and human beings want to do the wrong thing even when they know what's right. And the struggle between these two things, and we see it in Locke versus Hobbes. We see it certainly in the founding of the United States between Jefferson and Hamilton. What is man's basic nature? And this fight rages on and on and goes back and forth. And all of our politics are arranged around the idea that either we need more authority over people because their nature's bad, or we need, so is man's basic nature good? If it's good, then we just need to put him free in a state of nature and he'll be great, or he's bad and we need to control him. As it turns out, however, through which path does fascism most often occur? And it is from authoritarianism mostly occurs, is from utopians, right? That's what history tells us. But there's a path to authoritarianism the other way. Yeah, you can follow the Soviet model where you say, in order to make this a workers' paradise, first we have to kill a bunch of the workers. It's before people will start to behave. Or there's the other path that says people are so bad, we just need to police them a little bit harder and a little bit harder. And right now in America, authoritarianism is having another moment as Trump talks about, we got to get hard with these people. We got to knock them around a little bit. We got to let them know what we mean. And when you're talking about communities, you're talking about Dallas, Texas. You're talking about a place where you've spent a lot of time. You're talking about a place that does have a history of tension, a place that does have these difficulties. What's the answer? How do we solve this? There's nobody from outside the space that's going to come in and solve it. There's nobody that solves that. That can only be solved neighbor to neighbor, person to person. There isn't a mechanism for fixing that.
So then play that out for me then for how you see this next 16 weeks of our general election playing out, because maybe that's not exactly what's on people's minds, but it is the root answer or the root question, as it has been since Aristotle, as you so astutely pointed out.
I would say that, you know, we'll see. I suspect what you'll hear from Hillary Clinton, I suspect what you'll hear from Donald Trump are going to be to go to hot button issues for their electoral bases. So I suspect from Hillary Clinton, and she has an opportunity to elevate here. She has an opportunity to elevate her game and talk about things in a real way and do sort of what her husband did with Sister Souljah. Mm-hmm. And say, hey, look, Black Lives Matter, you're kind of a mess. And mm-hmm. what you're doing is encouraging the wrong people to do the wrong things. But what's the safer play for her? Gun control. Mm-hmm. Always gun control. You go back to gun control, and then your base gets fired up, and then they contribute. And then Donald Trump can say, no gun control. Well, last time he said gun control, and then they made him say not gun control because he needs money now. But he... on the Republican side, presumably, it will be, on the right, it will be Black Lives Matter people are terrible and they're against the police and all that stuff. And they'll go right to their bases, and there's not going to be any reaching out. You got to do the wrong things to win. In order to govern, there is a sense that you have to do the wrong things to get elected. And then you say, as soon as I get elected, I'll stop doing the wrong things. I'll stop demonizing. I'll stop marginalizing. I'll stop inciting even tacitly old hatreds. But as it turns out, once you get the way that you get elected says an awful lot about or determines an awful lot about how you're going to govern.
What do you make of how President Obama has addressed the issue? Because true to my theory that every time any president leaves the country, something dramatic happens domestically.
Yes.
As soon as he lands in Europe for the NATO meeting, which is a very important meeting at this juncture of the situation going on with ISIS
and Brexit.
Everything else.
Yes.
I thought that his speech, that it kind of went out of his way to be reasonable.
I thought it was good. I don't know what he's going to follow up with and whether he'll go to gun control. But
he kind of did. I mean, he's going to slam him on gun control, but that he always does. So I don't understand why people are being so angry with him.
He brushed past it a little bit, but boy, you could hardly have been more clear about police officers, utterly laudatory, pray for police officers, that we grieve with you, and talking about that. And he didn't attrit it, right? He didn't say, something I really don't understand about political communication. I watched the Republican National Committee do this, and I've seen other politicians do this. They say, well, we grieve what's happening in Minneapolis or in Minnesota and Louisiana with the shootings of Black citizens by police officers, and we mourn Dallas. And I think that is the sort of lazy relativism that is discrediting to the moment. These people can hold two thoughts in their head at the same time. They can say that there are shootings and that all too frequently in the United States, suspects or sometimes non-suspects are shot by police officers. These can be dealt with. What we saw in Dallas was wholly different. This was a Anbar province-style attack. This was a ambush. This was something very different.
There are questions. Like, would they call it a hate crime? Like Van Jones of CNN, he calls it a hate crime and terrorism.
It is terrorism. It is domestic terrorism when you have somebody that wants to slaughter police for being police. And the police were there, daggone it, protecting protesters who were there to protest them. What could be more American than a police officer standing in harm's way to protect people who were there to protest them? That's American. That is a truly American undertaking. And they gave their lives, those officers gave their lives in that pursuit. And that is something truly noble. And it is terrorism, and it is all that stuff. Treat it for what it is. Lumping this together to say, and Trump said something about all of the people who see all of the things. Okay, some things are different than the other things. And in this case, what happened in Dallas is meaningful enough, is substantial enough that you can do what Obama did and just talk about that one and say, we'll have another time to talk about something else. But what happened here is a bigger deal than that. Don't muddy it up.
Mm-hmm. One last thing on this, just because you're a Virginian.
Whoa. I reside in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I am a West Virginian.
Do you vote in Virginia?
Yeah.
Okay. So Trump's campaign manager, did you see what he said in Virginia?
Yeah.
This is the part when I started off this podcast saying I'm a little speechless and tongue-tied about the politics of it all, is that he actually said Hillary Clinton is to blame for the murders of these officers because of she has appeased Black Lives Matter.
Yep.
I'm uncomfortable with that.
Yeah, a little bit. I believe that's Corey Stewart, who is a former county executive in somewhere in Northern Virginia. He's Trump's state party chairman, Commonwealth Party chairman in Virginia. One of the reasons that Trump, and as we're recording this, that Trump should have already been out with the statement and been talking, because if you don't talk
and lead, right,
people are going to talk for you, and you're going to end up, it's sort of like if you let somebody else run your Twitter account and they put out sheriff stars, then you end up spending many days explaining that you're really not anti-Semitic, and you just happen to know some people online who are. That's why you have to get out early on important issues. You have to speak clearly, and you have to do it so there's not ambiguity. Am I right?
You're right. And you're probably going to be right about more as we continue to talk about things. We don't even have commercial breaks, so we can just blow right through that. So Hillary Clinton had...
Who would advertise on this? No one.
Don't say that.
All right.
Hillary Clinton, terrible week. You were talking about James Comey. I think she had a bad week, although I think that from her point of view, she had a great week because she didn't get indicted. She is going to, I don't know if you know this, she's going to do interviews tonight with CNN and PBS, maybe a couple of others.
Everybody but what network? Oh, that's right.
But it is sort of interesting. This will be the first time that she will be interviewed after the Comey decision, but I have a feeling she's going to blow right past the Comey decision so she can talk about Dallas. And that's the Democrats' play. They will say, we need to move on and talk about things that people really care about. Does she have a point?
I think... I mean, obviously she has a point, and her point is, please make me president. Does she have a point that we should move on? I think from the Republicans' point of view, watching them interrogate Comey and go over, and as an aside, can I just say, it is time for these people to stop asking questions and have either one. There were a couple. Will Hurd from Texas was very good. Trey Gowdy was very good in asking questions of Comey. But the rest of it, they're just trying to make noise so that they can get a clip on the hometown TV station.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they – you know how Fred Thompson became Fred Thompson?
Oh, yeah, the hearings.
The hearings. He was a lawyer. He wasn't a senator. He was doing the Watergate hearings, and he acted as the prosecutor. You would get so much more out of these things that instead of these people looking to get their own clip on television, that the chairman said, ain't nobody asking questions except for this guy, and let him go. And that's my number one reason why the grilling on the Hill always pans out to be a nothing burger. But anyway, how many times can you come back against Hillary Clinton on this? I don't know. I think it's very damning. I think it's very damaging that basically James Comey says, you lied. She definitely lied. And what he said is, she didn't lie to me, because if she lies to me, we can put her in jail. But if she lies to you, you can either vote for her or you can all you can do is vote against her. The other thing, of course, he said was, she's so unsophisticated that she couldn't even figure out how to
figure that's out what I said. Email. I said, how could somebody work in government and be that experienced and be the best, most experienced, amazing candidate ever in the history of the world, as President Obama said, and have learned so little? That's really an accomplishment.
Exactly.
Because let me tell you something. The way that the federal government does classifications and emails has not changed in 30 years. You don't have to be sophisticated. Like, I don't know how to use 90% of the stuff on my iPhone.
Oh, come on.
But classification stuff, like, it doesn't change. So if she learned about it when she was a senator and on the Armed Services Committee, then surely she would have dealt with it at some point. So I think that was pretty lame.
Are you really going to sit there and tell me you don't know how to do 90% of the things on your phone?
I bet it's true.
You don't know how to send a GIF. I do know that. That always
I don't, because
you.
And I have the best one of Jasper rolling his eyes. I mean, it is fantastic, and I don't know how to use it.
It's very saddening. Hillary Clinton didn't have a computer in her office as Secretary of State. Just FYI. Her bet is this, and this continues to be her bet. Her bet is that you don't like her, you don't want her, it doesn't matter because she's not Donald Trump. And very often you see this in re-election campaigns, and this was Obama's re-election campaign message. Hey, not so hot, is it? I didn't think so either. However, I'm not Mitt Romney. That guy's weird. And that was basically the 2012 campaign. Mitt Romney's a vampire. You're not happy. I'm not either, but Mitt Romney's a vampire, so you can't make him president. And Hillary Clinton, who, by the way, has subsumed all of Obama's campaign organization, has exactly the same message, but a thousandfold stronger. And what we see when we looked, I recommend very highly, the Pew Research Center does its infrequent but very thorough polling. And they find the state of the race, they found the state of the race at the end of June to be about the same as other people said. Hillary Clinton up, I think, 9 points. I'm not sure, something like that. But when you look underneath at the numbers with the key demographic groups, especially married women, married white women, and college educated women, these places where, especially among white voters, where Republicans have either done well or won, way behind. And so there's this, and that's what Hillary Clinton is betting on, is that in the end, Donald Trump will do so badly among women and won't make up for it on the other side with men that it just won't matter.
And which goes back to last August's Megyn Kelly question of Donald Trump, which is, how are you going to deal with this? I guess we'll see, because we are careening towards 2 weeks of a convention season. The Republicans are going first. The Democrats will go second. As far as I can tell, the information I have is that, you know, I think that the RNC is kind of putting on a good front, saying that the convention is going to be smooth, that they've got everything organized. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's fine to not have a plan and just, like, we'll go in and shoot from the hip, and that might work out perfectly well, and that would be great to know, because then we save a lot of time 4 years
sure.
from now.
Yeah, exactly.
But how do you think? Usually a candidate gets a little bump out of the convention in the polls.
Depends. You know what we've never had?
What?
Ted Cruz says he's accepted a speaking engagement that he will speak at the convention that nominates Donald Trump, but that he's not endorsing him.
He said he's not going to endorse.
Well, he said, we did not talk about an endorsement.
Oh, right.
And that Cruz has not yet endorsed him, but they did not talk about it. But he did unconditionally, that Trump did not require an endorsement as a condition. The Cruz said he would come and speak. And I thought, well, number one, that's weird. That would be if I go and give a speech to the Realtors Association. I'm not necessarily endorsing everything that the Realtors have ever done in the history of real estate, but I am at least saying they're cool. Like I'll be seen with them. So your own presence is an endorsement. So I think Cruz maybe is filleting the fish a little thin, but it is reflective of, I have no idea whether or not the speakers on the stage are going to say bad things about Donald Trump. I think it's possible somebody will. I think that there will be that expression. And I also firmly believe, and we'll find out next week, we'll find out next Thursday, I firmly believe that at the Rules Committee, there's going to be an effort, probably not successful, but they say they got at least 20 of the 28 votes they need to unbind the delegates. There will be demonstrations. There will be resistance. There will be this stuff. I think in for the Democrats in Philadelphia, there's going to be a ton of protests. And there's going to be a ton of upheaval, but it's going to be outside the convention hall. It's going to be in Philadelphia. I think for the Republicans in Cleveland, it's going to be in the hall. I think there's going to be stuff.
Wow. Okay, well, that's worth watching then.
Yeah.
On the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders says he's going to endorse Hillary Clinton on Tuesday. Like a hamburger today.
I will gladly endorse you Tuesday. And now that probably he's out of cash, but he's still got the Secret Service.
It irritates me. The Secret Service thing really irritates me. We need Secret Service to be focused on other things, not his security, for crying out loud.
Traveling around with him. And there's probably still enough campaign money left that there's like catered lunch every day. And that's always nice if they bring in sandwiches and stuff. So I don't know. It's hard for me to maintain interest in a candidate who – the amazing thing about Bernie Sanders is not about Bernie Sanders or the revolution he created or any of that. What it's about is there was so much anti-Hillary Clinton sentiment in the Democratic Party that it needed a place to go, and not inexplicably, but astonishingly, that location was in a guy who wasn't even a Democrat, 74-year-old socialist senator from Vermont.
Indeed.
Quinta.
Okay, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Because you were just talking about the Pew report. Obviously, that's a really good poll. The other polls are out there. I saw in your halftime report today, the Fox News halftime report, you were explaining to somebody how you come to look at your averages.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask you about the electoral map of 2016, because looking at the polls right now, where do you see things for the map? Because we've talked about that 2016 could totally scramble the map, and the red and blue states that we typically look at on election night will be all different. But do you think – well, we've that was in the past. You
it's
never
possible.
Said that. You
it's
never
possible.
Said that.
I mean, it's still possible.
But it's looking like it's probably going to be the same.
It's looking less likely. Though I will say Trump has – there's a tier of states that are – overwhelmingly white northern states with a lot of blue-collar voters. Pennsylvania, and I identify them as Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Maine, Wisconsin to some degree, Minnesota definitely, and Iowa. That these are Democratic states that have the right composition from a demographic point of view, that if Trump's doing okay, that the Democrats would really need to be worried.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as for the totally scrambled map that people have talked about, Massachusetts, California, New York, mm-hmm. all that stuff, nah, gee. I think the field poll has Trump down 24 points in California. So that's not a happening thing.
But what about Pennsylvania and Wisconsin?
Well, yeah, that's so. The sooner you trim your sails, and you know how the cycle goes. At the beginning of the electoral cycle, you say, we are going to compete in 50 states and everything's going to be great. And then by the end, you're like, it's really these four states. Holy crap. If you would just please vote for us in these four states, I swear, we'll give you everything you want.
And then you get those rumors that McCain's pulling out of Michigan.
Exactly. And then
Sarah Palin's on the plane like, no, we're not, because I'm on my way to Michigan.
Exactly. And then somehow we all have to put ethanol in our cars. It's a process. That effect, the sooner, if you do it too soon, it looks like you're losing. But if you wait too long to do it, then you haven't allocated your resources and your energies correctly. And picking your states, and look, I think for Trump, for example, Florida, I would not be wasting a lot of time on Florida now. I would see Florida is going to pretty much act like the national polling averages, and I wouldn't waste too much time on Florida. I'd have resources down there. If I were Trump right now, I would say Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Wisconsin, maybe Minnesota. I think Minnesota is perfect for him, and I think Iowa is perfect for him.
Hmm.
I think general election, Iowa, Minnesota, Iowa and Minnesota, certainly New Hampshire, Maine, and Pennsylvania. If he can just start making the Democrats play defense in those places,
that's
something. Make them go there. Hillary Clinton had her first opportunity to go on the campaign trail with Barack Obama the same day she was cleared by the FBI. So big congratulations, big day. She goes to, not cleared, but as big Julian Geisendahl said, my record is perfect, 32 arrests, no convictions. To go to what state? She didn't go to Pennsylvania. She didn't go to Michigan. She went to North Carolina. And that is indicative of how they see the race. And the scanty public polling that we have that includes North Carolina says she's right.
Yep.
It says Virginia, she's winning. It says North Carolina, it's tied. And that maybe she even has a slight edge.
Okay, then the last topic I'm going to cover with you before our trivia question is on the vice presidency. Because this weekend,
no.
I think that we will start to see either at least more, I guess the rumor mongering will get a little hotter. And I think Hillary Clinton is, it's in her interest to change the subject away from James Comey. So I think that you'll start to see them float a few more names out there. And then Trump's doing the same. I have a theory that the people being floated in Trump's circle are not going to be, none of those people are going to be the VP. That it's going to be a surprise.
Yes.
Do you agree?
It seems like what he's doing is sort of like the Bachelor. He goes and goes to your hometown for a date, and then you don't get the rose. And he, like Bob Corker, like, I'm really excited about Trump, and Corker goes up to New York, and they do all this stuff, and then Trump invites him to a rally, and then the next day Corker comes in and says, no, well, it's not going to be me. It's not going to be me. And Joni Ernst, Trump goes out, you know, goes on the campaign trail with her, spends some time with her, and then the next day, it's not going to be me. Mm-hmm. So I feel like maybe he's going.
So what does Newt Gingrich see that they don't?
Well, I'll say this. I think that.
Sorry, we've lost the connection.
I think what Donald Trump sees in Newt Gingrich is a person who can be a deputy president and do the hard work of being the president so that Trump can sign things and choose things and sort of do what he does in real estate now, which is lend his name and his energy to an effort, but let Gingrich be the guy who does it. And Gingrich, of course, also is not a challenge to Trump. He is Trump's age.
He doesn't expand the map.
No. there are those who say that he can appeal to blue-collar, white working-class Democrats.
Yeah, and if you see Fred Barnes' piece today about how Gingrich has changed his tune on trade because we're in a new era, which I guess maybe we are, but he's the
era.
One who...
We're in a new era where you're trying to be Donald Trump's running mate.
Yes. That's the thing that bothers me.
Well, but what I'm saying is if you pick Gingrich, I don't think you get anything out of the deal other than, again, if you want the guy who can be your co-president or your deputy, your president junior, yes, you get that. You get a guy who has experience in government and who is surrounded by a coterie of people who can come in and fill out an administration. So there's that. But in terms of what it gets you on the map or what it does, I actually think in that vein, if you were going to pick anybody, I think, and this just sounds weird, I don't think this is the best pick. I still think picking a Democrat or doing a silo breaker is a better choice for Trump. But if you wanted to pick a Republican and you wanted to sort of double down, I would double all the way down and I would take Rudolph Giuliani. I would take a guy with national security. And basically, in this way you present the animal in its cage in its natural habitat. You say, witness the Trump. And it is in its natural habitat. And its natural habitat is New York City. And Giuliani seemed improbable, much to his surprise, to voters in 2008. But he is identifiable as New York guy, as a tough guy, as a law enforcement guy, and also as a person who is hawkish on national security. And you just sort of, it's the Clinton-Gore double down effect, except for with old dudes from New York.
That's interesting.
I don't know. I mean, I think that would get him more than Gingrich would, because you know the other thing that Gingrich gets you? He has a lot of wild ideas. How to terraform planets, how to sell Alaska back to the Russians. He has a lot of ideas, and he is full of them, and he likes all these things. Giuliani can stay on message, and he can go out, and he can knock people around.
And govern.
If you say so.
Okay, I'll say so. Do you want to comment on Hillary Clinton's choices and what she's likely to do?
I don't know.
I've said Tim Kaine, Senator
boring.
Tim Kaine from
something,
Virginia
yes,
for a long
perfect.
Time.
Exactly. But tapioca.
Maybe do they? I mean, I guess if she's that far ahead in the polls, she can go safe.
Well, and her predilection is to always go safe. Her predilection is even when it means, setting up a homebrew email server in your house, to not let anybody into the process, shut everything down, keep it for yourself. And I think, I don't know, if I were Clinton, I would be reaching out more for Republicans. But I guess in from a Democrat's point of view, Tim Kaine does constitute a moderate. He's pro-life personally. But
what does that mean?
You know what that is. You may have some experience with that in 2004 with John Forbes Kerry, who said that while he personally abhorred abortion, he would not interject himself into the policy decision. You know that one.
Mm-hmm. Not impressed.
Not impressive.
Not impressed. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you would like to be asked this afternoon?
I would not like to be asked anything further, but I would like to say this. I would like to say that I cannot wait to see you go to the conventions aboard a bus, because I think you and your natural habitat with you and Gutfeld, and I want to make a Dumb and Dumber joke about the dog car driving to Colorado, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it.
It's going to the bus. The five is going on a bus trip. This is true. I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm really, really good on a road trip. Okay? I pick excellent snacks.
Like
I know
what?
When to talk and when to shut up. I am not so much of a nervous passenger that I will drive a driver crazy, but
alert
enough that I can be like, oh, hey, don't, like, go into the other lane with the semi-hurtling.
Let me ask you a question. Reese's peanut butter cups or Swedish fish? What is a superior road trip snack?
It depends on the time of day.
Okay. It's right now. It's afternoon.
Reese's peanut butter cups.
Everybody knows it's the Swedish fish because the peanut butter cups get all over everything. You get chocolate all over everything. The Swedish fish, they just go right in.
Okay. But so the Swedish fish are really, really bad for your teeth. I mean, really bad.
But
okay.
we're on a road trip, ergo we have thrown all convention out the window, and also I'm probably going to get a hamburger wrapped inside a hamburger for dinner, so who cares?
I do love the wrapped hamburgers. We will see you there. I will end with a quick trivia question.
Yes.
For you. This president signed a bill into law creating a federal holiday honoring Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Ronald Reagan.
Too easy for you.
Hey.
We'll have to make it harder next time.
Please do. Tell Pam and Jason to step it up.
Yeah, step it up. Well, I don't know if I'll talk to you before the convention.
But it's going to be so great, and I hope we can do a nameless podcast from out there.
Oh, yeah. Let's do a podcast with no name on this and on live on Facebook.
Yay.
Okay. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye.